Hello and welcome to the TAA teleconference Scholarly Publishing, Finding Support Through Peer Mentoring, presented by Dr. Linda Searby, Assistant Professor of Education in the School of Education at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Linda has been in the field of education for over 25 years. She established and directed two successful private preschools early in her career. She was an elementary school teacher for 7 years and served as a public elementary school principal for 10 years. Her passion as an administrator was leading her schools in staff development and systemic change. She joined the faculty in educational leadership at the University of Alabama at Birmingham in August 2005. At the UAB, she teaches courses in leadership and administration, curriculum and supervision, politics of education, mentoring, and school-based problem solving. In 2007, Linda and two other non-tenured assistant professors in the School of Education formed a scholarly writing support group as a way to offer structured support for the school's non-tenured faculty who wish to become more prolific scholarly writers. I now turn the teleconference over to Linda Searby, who will share how she created the support group, describe the success that they have had, and show you how you can develop a similar group on your campus. And I also want to remind those who might have just called in to please press 4-star to mute yourself. We are recording this teleconference and we want to minimize any background noises. You can press 4-star again to ask a question. All right, thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I welcome you to the teleconference. This is Linda Searby from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. I'm a professor in educational leadership, as Kim already told you. I've been told that it takes a long time sometimes to do all the introductions of people who might be listening in. So the way we'll handle that is that when I pause periodically for questions to be asked, if you have a question, you can press your 4-star, unmute yourself, and ask your question. And before you do that, if you would identify yourself and where you are located, and then ask your question. And then at the end, if there are others who haven't had any questions, we'll just ask you who you are and where you're from. Okay, so you have a handout that has some slides, A Leg Up to Go Up, Supporting New Faculty Towards Earning Tenure Through the Formation of a Professional Learning Community. A little bit of background is that I just made a transition to higher education about 5 years ago, and just 4 years ago to the University of Alabama at Birmingham. When I came here, this was my first experience being in a Research One university environment where publishing and research was a very high priority. We have a medical school, dental school, nursing school, et cetera, at UAB, and so it's highly research-oriented, and that means that whether or not you're in the School of Education or the School of Medicine, there are still the same high expectations for the research and publishing.
I see.
And so what was scary about that is that I came from a practitioner background of being a school administrator, and my only experience with scholarly writing was my dissertation. And so this was a whole new world for me. When I came in as a new professor, there were about 5 or 6 others who came in the same year as I did as brand new faculty. And then I started asking around, and I found out that there were 15 of us who were on tenure track but not yet tenured. And so there was a group of us who were all on this search together, a lot of very young faculty also, and a lot of them with practitioner background in the same situation as I was. And first couple years, I was mentored very well by one of my colleagues. I have no complaints about that. My first week here, she took me out to lunch, and she said, okay, let me tell you about tenure and promotion and how that works, and we're going to get you to some presentations, and here's how you turn your presentations into a paper, and we'll talk about some journals that you should submit to and so forth. And so I had very good mentoring. But I really had this need for feeling connected to other junior professors. And so I just wondered about the possibility of us starting a peer support group for ourselves. And along came a request for proposal across campus for a faculty development grant. Anyone could write and ask for funds to do something that would be in the area of faculty development. So I wrote a grant and I asked for $13,000 to start a group that would be a professional learning community for assistant professors not yet tenured. Well, I didn't get the grant across campus, but the dean of the School of Education, who had had to sign off on my application, told me, if you don't get the grant, come back and talk to me because I like your idea and I'll be willing to fund it at some level. So I went back to him and he gave us some funds, I think totaled about maybe $4,000 for the first year to do our activities. But to tell you the truth, you could do a project like this with very, very little money. So we formed a group called SNAP, Support Network for Assistant Professors, and the goals were to help ourselves transition to these tenure track positions and to offer each other peer support. Chiefly, we focused on the first year anyway, the increased writing skills and production of our writing, because that's so highly emphasized. It was an expectation at our university that you submit two journal articles accepted per year in peer-reviewed journals. The group was majority female. 9 females and 3 males were the ones that, out of the 15, who indicated interest in the group. We had some diversity across ethnic, racial lines. And so we formed our group, and we decided that we would meet monthly, the third Friday of every month. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of literature background on new faculty needs and some rationale for why a group like this is important and is needed. I won't overwhelm you with that, but I think there's some very telling research out there about new faculty and how they adjust to their work and so forth. So I'm going to give you a few highlights of those, okay? Mingus, in 99, said in his book called Faculty and New Jobs, which is a great book, by the way, Mingus, M-E-N-G-E-S, he said, of all the expectations brought by faculty to their new positions, two stand out. Collegiality stands out as the most problematic. Expectations that are held overtly or covertly by the institution or the department head or senior faculty, and time management. I guess that's 3, isn't it? It says 2 stand out, but actually that was a list of 3. 5 problematic features of junior faculty life that are consistent with most studies are that anxiety is high for us. We have jitters about surviving in the job. We feel tremendous pressure from obligations that compete for our time and energy. We report a sense of isolation, and we find fewer connections with colleagues than we had in our former careers. There are no set schedules here. Everybody's kind of an independent contractor in some ways in higher education. At least it feels that way. We experience stress from professional matters that overflow into our non-work areas, sometimes creating tension in families and other relationships. We experience dissonance about the rewards we receive from our work. For instance, we may spend the majority of our time on teaching-related activities, but most of all, we learn soon that the advancement is more dependent on the accomplishments in research and scholarship. And so even though, you know, teaching takes up most of our time, in some ways we get the message it doesn't count as much for tenure and promotion as does the writing and research. Mingus also found that women had fewer or weaker mentoring relationships as well as fewer collegial opportunities. So I think this points to another need for having peer mentoring and peer networking. Mingus in his book had a really good chapter on learning from leavers, those who leave the academy. And his findings point to 3 issues associated with faculty departure: concerns about the department as community, concerns about teaching research dilemma, and concerns about professional advancement or moving on up. So the picture painted by this research is very clear. Collegiality is important to the welfare of new faculty. And what new faculty seem to be lamenting is the absence of rich relationships with their colleagues. relationships that include examination of course materials, discussions of common problems with students, reviews of journal manuscripts, advice about programs of research, and thoughtful feedback on job performance. What new faculty desire is genuine collegiality, and that as professional, social, and personal. Mentoring has been described as one of those professional, social, and personal relationships with sometimes a senior colleague. And the research in Mingus's book suggests that new faculty ought to request such generally collegial relationships. Those who thought their mentors had more long-lasting relationships with them. And I'm a firm believer in an individual seeking out his or her own mentor, identifying someone for that role and actually approaching someone to mentor you rather than being assigned. But that's kind of a separate issue. Okay. New faculty also want feedback, both affirming and corrective, to help them make improvements, and they want clarifying feedback to clarify expectations. We need help with time management sometimes. Teaching seems to take the most of our time, and sometimes the lack of time management keeps us from attending to our writing in a regular way. Sometimes we ignore the important in favor of the urgent. Boyce, in 1992, another great book, Advice for New Faculty Members by Boyce, B-O-I-C-E. He cited some reasons why faculty maybe lack collegiality in higher education. Number one, there are some perceptions by new faculty that senior faculty are unwilling or unable to provide the support needed. Number two, sometimes poor quality advice is received. Sometimes new faculty, number three, are passive in terms of seeking out collegial support. And number four, the busyness of new faculty with the inability to balance competing demands on their time seems to just eat them up. New faculty also want intellectual companionship. Fink, in his book called The First Year of College Teaching, did some seminal research, and he found that having colleagues with whom you can discuss ideas and professional concerns is really a desire of new faculty. But only one-third of Fink's study participants found such companionship. Those who said they did not said it had a negative effect on their professional satisfaction. Participants who did find intellectual companionship received higher course evaluations from students and higher assessments from chairpersons and colleagues. And then last, Sorcinelli, S-O-R-C-I-N-E-L-L-I, has done a lot of research on new faculty development. And she identified five factors as new faculty stressors: the time constraints in research and teaching, lack of collegial relations, inadequate feedback, recognition, and rewards, unrealistic expectations, insufficient resources, and lack of balance between work and personal life. So to sum up the literature in this area, I would say that all new faculty have three basic needs, just like Adler said way back in 1931. They have the need to feel capable, the need to contribute, and the need to be connected. I will stop right there and ask if there are any questions. Press star 4 if you want to unmute and ask a question. Kim, am I being heard all right?
Yes,
hello?
I can hear you. I can hear you fine.
Oh, okay.
Anyone who has not muted themselves, can you please do so? I can hear a little background noise. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but if you haven't pressed 4-star to mute yourself, please do so. Otherwise, no one has any questions. We'll just move on.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes,
hi.
I hear you.
Veronica Watson from Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And I was interested in this lack of mentoring that junior faculty in particular seem to have, and really sort of wondering about how to go about developing those kinds of relationships as a junior faculty member. I think one of the reasons that many of our departments turn to the assignment kind of model for mentoring is because for a junior faculty member who's coming in, who doesn't know colleagues, who doesn't have expectations, doesn't know who's perhaps working in research areas similar to his or her own, it can be difficult, if not impossible, to sort of identify early on who potential mentors are. So I was just wondering if you could comment on that.
Well, yes, I think it's kind of a catch-22. If you come into a university and your university does have a mentoring program, it's usually one of those programs where you are assigned a mentor, and that may or may not end up being a good fit. On the other hand, if there's not a mentoring program and you're new to the culture, you don't know who would make a good mentor for you. So you have kind of a catch-22 there. I would be very assertive in asking around and trying to find out very early on what some other people in the area are researching and what their interests are. One of the best ways to do that is to start a group like this SNAP group, although there you would be talking to peers who are like you, who are in the non-tenure track. But certainly your department chair would be able to tell you about some others in your department who have similar research interests. I keep your eyes and ears open for people that you seem to be drawn to for personality reasons or for similarities in values or research interests or whatever, and try to get to know those people, but not make an ask until you are sure that might be someone you would want to mentor you. In the meantime, something that I did was rely on someone from another university that I did know who was actually a friend of mine who had gone into higher ed a couple years before me, and she kind of became my mentor from another location until I was able to develop more mentors here on my own campus. Okay, shall we move on about the SNAP group? Okay, so we started this group, two other women and myself, and we had the goals that you can see on the handout that basically focused on the fact that we wanted to increase our support with each other for our scholarly writing. We wanted to develop skills. We wanted to develop collegiality. We wanted to access materials and tools that would assist us with our scholarly writing. And we wanted to have at least one retreat for structured times of writing and immersion in writing, collaboration. That ended up being a guest speaker for a whole-day workshop on writing. And the one that the dean really wanted was number 5, to provide non-tenured faculty the opportunity to increase the number of submitted manuscripts per calendar year. And we kind of resisted setting the goal as everyone submitting two, because we didn't want anyone to like run away from the group because of a goal they thought they might not be able to meet. But as it turned out, almost everybody did meet the goals of two manuscripts that first year. So what we did was meet monthly on the third Friday of every month for 2 hours, 11 to 1, over the lunch hour. Part of the funds that the dean gave us went the first year for him providing box lunches for that time that we met. And the first time we met, we did a speed networking activity. I didn't send a handout on that, but basically we just did, you've heard maybe of speed dating, where you go into a room as if you're wanting to get a date, and every 5 minutes you move from table to table and have a conversation with a prospective date. Well, we did speed networking along those lines, but we every 5 minutes changed tables, and we had a couple or three prompts that we asked each other to find out what our research interests were, what our hobbies and interests were outside of school, what courses we taught, and so forth. And that was really a fun experience because we came from, even though we're all in the School of Education, we came from 5 different departments, like health education, physical education, human studies, special education, curriculum instruction, and educational leadership and counseling. So we, you know how you stay in your own programs, you don't really cross programs sometimes and even collaborate or talk to other people in other other programs, even in the same school. So we found out a lot about each other that we didn't already know. We also had a Friday where we just all came together and said, okay, how do you go about being productive in your writing? What are some tips that you can give the group? And so we kind of created a list of tips for being productive in writing or being efficient or effective and just real practical things, just sharing our writing strategies. One Friday, we were all instructed to bring a piece of work in progress, and we shared with a partner, and we read each other's, and we critiqued it, and we said, you know, what's clear, what's not clear, what's good, what's what stands out, gave constructive suggestions to each other for that piece. And in this group, you know, there were some who had already published quite a bit who were, like, closer to the end of their tenure earning years, and so some of them in the group had a lot more experience already at writing than some of us in our first year. We did a group editing of a rejected manuscript. You know, the publisher sends it back, gives you some suggestions. We worked together, like with an overhead projector, how we would group edit that manuscript. Another really interesting program we had was invite some senior faculty members who serve as journal editors for various journals. And we asked them to tell us, what do journal editors look for, and how can you give us some tips to get us over the top and get those articles we submit included in your journals? What are some general suggestions you can give us? And we learned a lot from that. I don't know if you've heard of the Cabell's Directory, but one session we just brought two sets of Cabell's. That these are thick volumes of books, like for education. They have them for all different subject areas, but they list all the journals that are out there in your area, and each journal has a page in the book, and it tells acceptance rate, what kind of journal articles they're looking for, gives a website, it gives the, you know, the style they accept, it gives what kind of articles they accept, and then even, you know, publication tips. And so it's really it was kind of an eye-opener. Most of the group hadn't seen the Cabell's directories, and they said, well, we didn't even know there was this journal or that journal, and it gave them some ideas for new places to submit manuscripts. Then we had our associate dean, who's in charge of the graduate things like tenure and promotion, come and talk to us about the tenure expectations in our School of Ed, because this is what makes us the most nervous. You know, is this a moving target, or is this a target that we know we can hit if we know this, 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 and this is expected? What really goes on behind closed doors when you see it, get our materials and we're up for tenure review? So we got a little more information about that, and that's actually evolving. We had another one again this year, and we're going to have another one in a couple months because there's some things changing in regards to that. But our associate dean has been very open. It's not a closed situation where they're trying to hide the secrets of tenure and promotion from us. They want us to be successful. And then we had the writing workshop where we had Dr. Tara Gray from New Mexico State come, and she has a book called How to Become a Prolific Writer, and she did a whole day workshop with us with a lot of very practical tips to become more productive. Okay, well, our dean definitely said that success would be two manuscript submissions from each participant. But to us as the organizers of SNAP, we were also looking for that increased connectedness and reduced isolation that sometimes new professors find. We wanted to increase our writing capabilities and contribute to our field and have a lot more confidence about going up for tenure. And so that was the way we organized our group. So I'm going to stop right there before I go on to talk about the results and give you some comments from our participants in the first year. So any questions about how we set up the structure or the kinds of activities we did or anything like that?
Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, this is Arlisha Mathis from the University of Michigan Flint. I had a question about the book, the Cabell's books. Could you spell
uh-huh.
it, please? I've never heard of that.
That is spelled C-A-B-E-L-L.
Oh, like
yes.
Okay.
Cabell's Directories. I believe you could even check with your library systems. There's an online version of it that your library might subscribe to. But they have various volumes for various subject area fields. And the set of directories is pretty expensive, like $200 or $300 for like three volumes. So your library may have purchased this. And they put them out like every 4 or 5 years, they do a new edition. And so it's just a really good reference where you can flip through and find these journal titles that you never even heard of, but you can see what the circulation is and what the acceptance rate is, and it just and read kind of this to see if an article you have written might be a fit for that journal. So it just kind of opens your eyes to the number of journals that are out there that you might not be aware of.
Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Angela Jackson. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, I'm from Indiana, and I just wanted to make a comment as you move forward. I am one of those faculty members who left the professoriate, and I guess when you talked about community environment, I just wanted to make a plug that that was crucial, not having a model of what a successful junior faculty member, especially of color, looks like. And so, I mean, I'm writing a book now about cultural competency, but I just wanted to put that into the mix.
Yes, there is quite a bit of research out that women and people of color do not get access to the mentoring as readily as do males. Number of reasons, which you can probably speculate about, but I think that, that points to more urgent need for those of us who want the mentoring, who want the collegiality, to advocate for ourselves. I guess I wasn't a person who was going to sit back and wait for somebody to help me. I was going to seek it out myself and seek out that collegiality. It's important to me to have those connections. I didn't want to work in isolation. I wanted to, and I think the younger people coming into the professoriate now are different than those in the generation above us. I'm 56, but the people that are in our group are a lot younger than me by and large. I mean, we have several 30-somethings. You know, they're starting their families. We're having baby showers for these people, and they're trying to balance a lot. But they're just more open and willing to. They want to share and they want to help each other, and they want to see all of us be successful. They don't come in with that competitive attitude like, I'm going to, do my thing and stay in my room and I'm not sharing. The younger ones are coming in with this very open attitude and wanting to share. So I'm in their camp too, and I say, hey, we're all going for the same goal, and there's not a quota like some of us can make it and some of us can't. As far as I'm concerned, as far as all I've heard, we can all make tenure, so there's no reason for us to be competitive about this. But you do make a very good point, and thank you for bringing it up, because there is plenty of research that say that women and minorities do not get the mentoring that they need. Anyone else?
One additional question.
Yes.
Veronica Watson at Indiana University of Pennsylvania once again. One of the ideas that was on the slides was exploring shared authorship. I don't believe that I heard you speak about that when you were sort of outlining your activities, so could you speak about that for a moment?
Sure. After that speed networking that we did the very first session when we met, we found out that some of us had some similar interests. For instance, I had interest in mentoring, and there was a person in the curriculum instruction who talked about the fact that she was interested in the mentoring of new teachers, and I was interested in mentoring new principals and so forth. So we found we had a common interest. Someone else found a common interest with someone from the senior faculty who came from the panel that talked about the different journal editors. When that panel came, one of the panel members talked about one of his interests, and one of our members said, oh, I'm interested in that too. And they actually have ended up collaborating on a joint article. Also, the other two women who started this group with me, we have done some joint authorship together across two departments, and it was about the SNAP group. We actually wrote about this group. You know, we did a literature review. We turned the first year into a research project. So if you start a group like this on your campus, I would suggest you even get IRB approval and turn it into a research project or at least a program review or something that you can write about. And I don't know if Fran Karanovich is on this teleconference. She's a colleague of mine at SIUE. I know she had signed up, and I actually was invited to go there and talk to their new faculty development committee about doing something like SNAP. And if they start one, then she and I are going to do some writing together comparing their group, which they won't call SNAP, and our group, and the kind of the results. And so I just think it's fun to find out what other people are interested in and invite each other to join up as co-authors if you have similar interests.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Shall we move on? Okay, let's talk about the results. 81.9% of our participants, that would be out of the 12 regular attenders, felt that participation in the SNAP group motivated and assisted them in writing and publishing more. 75% met the writing goals that they set for themselves. I didn't mention that. One of the sessions at the beginning, we each set our own goals for personal production. As far as scholarly productivity goes, 8 of the 12 participants responded that of those 8, 62% had 3 articles that were still in review, 12 had 2, 25% had 1. And as far as those accepted, 11% had 4 articles accepted, 11% had 3 articles, 33% had 2 articles, and 33% had 1 article. So basically, everyone produced, and a good many people exceeded the 2 article goal, and some just hit it right on the nose. And so other things, there were 2 book chapters submitted, and 1 was in progress. There was a whole chapter in a book and 2 book reviews submitted. So all attested that they had at least 2 articles written under review or accepted in the past academic year. And so I think there was one who didn't respond that maybe hadn't met the goals. But the majority did meet their own goals, and our dean was very pleased and actually made mention the fact that this group had probably been more productive collectively than the senior faculty this past year collectively. So anyway, we felt that we had accomplished a lot of our goals and felt good about that. And we encouraged each other. You know, every month we encouraged each other. We did some accountability with each other and so forth. Some of the comments that were made on the end of the year evaluation from participants: the connection of the group, even though our research interests were very different, was really valuable. Appreciated the editing workshops. It's helpful to hear how others manage responsibilities along with TNP requirements. To know who else is working towards tenure and to realize that all face challenges in finding time to write. I loved the support of other junior faculty who were on the same career trajectory. Appreciated the support for academic writing in a collegial atmosphere. This is an important initiative, and I wish it had been started earlier in my tenure process. I don't feel so alone in the quest for tenure, knowing that others have the same pressures and feeling the support and encouragement as opposed to competition from colleagues in the School of Ed. SNAP provided a place for collaboration, idea sharing, and mentorship. Getting to know my colleagues better was a major benefit for me. The SNAP group helped create unity. We have also continued the group this year, and we did an end-of-the-year survey with suggestions for activities for this year, like we wanted to do a writing think tank activity where you do like a whole day of really intense writing and editing at a remote location, and you have like an editor on the site and everybody kind of brings their laptops and immerses themselves in writing and has the editor appointments throughout the day. We talked about, you know, we need to maybe have an APA workshop. We need to do more of the peer editing and the writing circles. We wanted to hear again from someone who had just gone through tenure and promotion and have them share with us, like, how they prepared their materials, what they turned in, and so forth. We want to make sure people were encouraged to use the School of Education Editor Service. Our School of Education pays for each of us, if we want to use it, for somebody on campus who's a really good APA guru who charges to do editing for people. Our School of Ed will pay for each faculty member, if they want to have two pieces edited by this editor. And so also we're planning to meet monthly this year. We have a January full-day workshop planned, and it's going to be on what gets in the way, identifying and overcoming personal barriers to putting your plans in place. And we're going to have a woman who does strategic personal planning with people to come and talk to us about how you work around barriers that you set up for yourself or your own roadblocks to success, and work on strategies for overcoming those barriers. And so we have several ideas for continuing our workshops and our meeting this monthly this year, and we're really pleased about that. Challenges, I can tell you the biggest challenge of this whole thing is finding a time when everybody can meet together. And even though the majority said third Friday of the month will work the best, when it comes down to the third Friday, somebody's going to a conference, somebody has to go to a school visit, somebody's traveling, whatever. So it's really been hard to have meetings where 9 whole people out of the 12 are there, or even 6. Sometimes it's 4, sometimes it's 7, sometimes it's 3. And so that's been the hardest part. We all say we're committed to it, but when it comes right down to it, some Fridays there's just some other conflicts. And we understand, you know, everybody has to go to these conferences. They're usually on the end of the week and so forth. So that's been the biggest challenge, is to keep a consistent group of people meeting every month. Okay, I'm going to stop and see if there are any questions again. If there aren't any, let me ask you one and you can respond. Please punch *4 and say whether or not anything like this exists on your campus, or if you in the past have been involved in anything like a support group for non-tenured professors, and what kinds of things you did in that group.
Okay, it's 4-star, just so you know.
4-star. Okay, 4-star to unmute.
Hi, it's Suzanne Cook from the University of Toronto. I just wanted to mention that with my thesis supervisor, he has quite a few grad students under his wing. We meet monthly about our thesis writing, and that's been really, really, really valuable. And hearing about your group has just opened up a whole new set of ideas for what I can do when I actually do obtain a faculty position, because I think it's really exciting what your group has been doing.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Suzanne.
This is Angela Jackson. I just wanted to echo that before I left the professoriate, I'm the type of person that really reaches out and take advantage of the professional developments or workshops for faculty. And so because of that, I actually kind of created my own network from attending the different workshops and just getting out on campus. And even though people were not in my department, I really created my own community, if you will. So I think indirectly, I exhibited, you know, and kind of went through the process of a lot of things that you guys have benefited from in your SNAP group, and we even had some writing circles. And so the time commitment was challenging, but my point is that the reaching out is, you know, that's something that you really have to do, I'm finding out, especially if you feel more isolated for whatever reason. That is a powerful piece.
I agree, and thank you for sharing that. Is it Angela?
Yes, it is.
That's a really important point to reach out across campus, because there are likely other people who want those same connections, and sometimes we just have to find where they are.
Yes, thank you.
This is Veronica Watson. We have a Center for Teacher Excellence at IUP, and that focus, I mean, it has a lot of the same goals, but it's around teaching. And so while I've been sort of moderately active there, I've not really found a writing support group. So I'm creating my own, which is the reason that I'm here. I actually have a grant to develop this. It was going to be on my campus. That's what I proposed, but it sort of got picked up more broadly than that, and now is being implemented across the state system here in Pennsylvania. And I'm spearheading that effort. So this is really useful for me to sort of think about not only how to conduct the workshop that the two workshops that I'm conducting for all of the universities in our system, but also how to continue that work within those smaller groups once they're back on their campus, and what kinds of suggestions we might make for how to continue their work together.
That's great. And if you would like to talk further about any more pieces of documentation I use, you know, like a mid-year evaluation, or the, I think I said an attachment that the beginning of the year needs assessment. I didn't even mention that in my talk, but that's important to find out what everybody needs so you aren't providing something no one wants. So if there's anything else I can provide in the way of technical support, please don't hesitate to let me know.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Linda Searby, I do have a question for you.
Okay.
What do you think was maybe the strongest motivator, besides having the presence of people there doing the same thing that you're doing, that produced the most results in the writing?
What was the greatest motivator?
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, because you guys have some awesome results, and, you know, you can get together for those, you know, whenever you get together, but that's not just producing that those results. You know, they have to be doing something else.
Right,
you committed
to a goal, but you're reaching that goal not in the SNAP group meetings. You're reaching them some other time of your week, month.
Exactly.
I think in a way it might be that peer support and those kind of peer expectations that, next month they're going to ask me to report on what I've done this month, and I don't want to have to say nothing. And they've given me some concrete tips of how I can be more productive. It's up to me to implement some of these strategies. So I think it might be like the subtle pressure of not wanting to be embarrassed. And I guess I think my speculation is the couple that stopped coming might have not been ones that were producing, and they didn't want to have to share that. And so they just stopped coming. I don't know that for sure. It's only a speculation, and but I think that, you know, anytime you do something together, they say it's really good to have accountability partners to lose weight or to exercise or whatever. Just like any kind of goal you want to reach, it's good to have other people to be accountable to. And even if it's not, it wasn't scolding accountability. It was just it was encouraging accountability. But you didn't want to be someone who came to the group and not have anything to share. You wanted to be able to share a joy, a success, a victory, an accepted manuscript, and so forth. So I think that was the motivation. And, just the fact that we have pretty clear guidelines here in our school. I know that not all schools do, but we had the pretty clear guidelines of what was expected. That was basically, you're going to be fine if you can do two a year. And so if you get behind... I mean, if you only do one this year, that means you have to do three next year to average it out. So I think everybody felt that pressure of knowing that to reach success as far as the university expectations, that you had to do it too. So I think a combination of the standardized expectation and the subtle social expectation of being in the group and wanting to have something positive to report might have been a couple of the motivators.
Thank you.
I wasn't hearing from too many of you about what might be happening on your campuses. Does that mean there's not anything going on in the way of collaboration and anything to develop community among faculty, whether it be junior faculty or senior faculty, in the way of encouragement for scholarly writing?
Hey, Linda, this is Jay Madison. I'm in
Tallahassee,
Florida. Yeah. I'm a grant writer for the TAA Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to speak to something the idea of a blended learning model, or maybe when you're looking at time and managing it, perhaps some of this can be done through the Internet. You could create a circle where you could actually edit, store each other's works, appraise each other's, and evaluate. What do you think? Professional learning communities online.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept, and I think because of time constraints and actually getting bodies together to meet, that's a very viable suggestion. If you could email me, Jay, it's lsearby@uab.edu. I would like to know more about that. Perhaps you've been involved in something like that.
Well, right now we're working on diversity of education projects through the foundation, and what we found is a lot of the junior faculty are extremely interested in developing professional learning communities where they actually work with, say, 8th to 12th graders. And so they become mentors to them. And by doing community outreach, they actually begin to become writers themselves, you know, better writers. So it all works one to the other. So it's kind of like, you pay attention. You focus on younger and older adults by helping them write, so they become better writers themselves. But you engage it through professional learning experiences online.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
But I'll send you an email.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to ask, did my friend Fran Karanovich from SIU ever sign in?
Hi, this is Joan Carnoso from Boise State University in Boise, Idaho.
Yes, Joan.
We have one of the other listeners had described a teaching and learning center. We also have that at our school. It opened probably about 2 years ago, and they do encourage writing circles, and but it's hard to get into them because of teaching hours. You know, as an example, I teach 5 hours of classes on Fridays, and Fridays is usually the day when everybody wants to meet. So those are difficult to get into. But this past summer, I joined the National Writing Fellows. It's a national group that helps encourage your writing and helps facilitate writing in students. You know, like the gentleman was just talking about, and I am a nursing professor, but there were no other nursing professionals in this group. It was, you know, high school principals, high school teachers, elementary math teachers, and there were 25 of us, and we spent 5 weeks, five days a week together, every day, writing. And as a result of that group, I have a writing group, but they're not within my own profession, which doesn't bother me, you know. But I don't find that in nursing there is very good mentoring of new faculty.
That's interesting. Actually, when I've done my reviews of literature on mentoring, I see a lot of journal articles about mentoring that come from nursing field and medical field. So maybe it's happening somewhere, but not everywhere.
It mostly is the nurses who are just graduated going into acute care, into a hospital setting. They are mentored very well, but a new nursing faculty coming into a department,
that's
mentoring.
Yes, I see what you mean. Right. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joan.
May I make a recommendation there, please? This is Jay Madison again.
Yes.
The Institute of Teaching and Mentoring through the Southeast Regional Board. If you just Google that and go up there, I think you'll see a real excellent example of how the medical and nursing allied fields can get involved in a very well-established, protracted mentoring program that actually gives scholarships, to graduate students, to continue and to become scholarly publishers. That's the Institute of Teaching and Mentoring through SREB.
Okay, thank you.
I'd just like to echo that I actually was a recipient of the SREB scholarship, so it is an excellent program.
Is that Angela?
Yes, I'm sorry. Angela Jackson. I went to Virginia Tech, and I was a recipient of the SREB, and they were powerful. Again, they do specialize in increasing faculty of color, and they give you everything you need to get that PhD. So.
That's wonderful, Angela. Thanks for telling me that.
Sure.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.